a minute to go. Another ball into the area. The header, great save by Jonathan Bond. Unbelievable.
Look at this. Well done, Bond, as he's shifting back to his left. He's able to quickly get off of his feet and parry that one out for the corner.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hello, Matthew. We're back.
We are back. The first time we've done a feature interview in quite a while.
It has been a while, but we're back with a bang.
We are. An MLS goalkeeper, no doubt. Mm. First time, I think, we've had an MLS goalkeeper on.
I believe it is. And not just any MLS goalkeeper. I sound like an M&S advert. Not just any MLS goalkeeper. The LA Galaxy goalkeeper, no less. Of course, Mr. Jonathan Bond. So someone that I've known for a very long time. Of course, he was with me at Watford when he was a young pup. Came through the ranks there, did brilliantly there, and since gone on to play for several different clubs. Now finds himself at LA Galaxy. So naturally, I enjoyed this one. And it was one where, knowing extra bits and pieces that I do and having known him for so long, we were able to take it down several different avenues. We're now doing this intro, and again, just to kill the magic, we're now doing the intro and outro a couple of days after the event. So this has already taken place. And you weren't particularly pleasant about my interviewing style in this one. And one of the reasons being that we did this very late at night. So I was a little bit sleepy. I'd had some extra coffee to try and make sure that I was in a good place for it. I thought I was excellent. I thought I really asked some like questions that took him deep, you know, really delved deep into his psyche. But you didn't agree.
It was just a bit haphazard. I mean, you did well. You did ask some very good questions. Mm. But we've spoken at length before about the fact that you don't want me to do too much research. You don't want too many stats and facts and all that stuff. You just want the conversation to flow. However, there does need to be just a bit of a schedule, just a little bit of a script in order for it to run nice and smoothly.
Yeah. Have you managed to edit this well then?
Well, you flew off it.
I know.
I went completely rogue.
I went on tangents. Yeah. We'd start. Well, there was no flow. It was, we'd talk about Galaxy, then we'd talk about Watford, then we'd talk about childhood, then back to Galaxy, then Reading, which I kind of enjoyed. You know, it's how a lot of people's minds work. They don't need the whole linear, also it all started here, you were 12 years old and you played. Like, no one really enjoys that. So I just thought, let's just go, let's see where it goes. And then things would pop to mind. You know, him taking out Gianfranco Zola. So I'm just hoping that you've done some magic with your editory. That's not a word, is it?
It works. Yeah, it's a good interview. So the fact that Richard's saying it's not is ridiculous, because it is good.
Oh, it's a great interview. Yeah. Really good. I thought it was superb. It just made me question and doubt myself afterwards.
The only thing I would say is that just listen out for a few mentions of Aston Villa goalkeeper coach Neil Cutler.
Yeah. We must make the point. This isn't a tribute to Neil Cutler, because some people listening in might think that this is some marketing pitch for Neil Cutler, because I think we actually, and the fact we've just mentioned his name three more times, I think that probably takes us into treble figures for the podcast.
I think it does. Right, enough of this. Let's see what Jonathan Bond has to say. This week's guest is a goalkeeper who has followed in the footsteps of great goalkeepers to have started their English football career at Watford. Pat Jennings, David James, Scott Loach. Any more, Rich? Can you think of any more?
I mean, that's about it. I think that's about it, yes.
Spells with Reading and West Brom followed before a switch across the pond where he currently resides. The multinational Wall of Los Angeles, LA Galaxy number one, Jonathan Bond. Welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Delighted to have you on. Richard, as per the opening three questions, please.
You're going to ask this. It suddenly just hit me. We've got the three quick fire questions. It's been so long since we've done a feature pod. So let me have a quick think what they were. One of them's definitely brand of gloves, which I know the answer to this. But what is your brand of gloves, Mr. Bond?
At the moment, it's Adidas. But basically, the MLS is sponsored by Adidas. So we just get given like Adidas boots and gloves on demand, which is pretty cool. But yeah, I'm happy with them. And yeah, they're nice. They're spiky and cool.
So spiky. So do you wear those Predator Pro gloves? We saw them. I mean, obviously they've been around, but we saw them quite a lot at Euro 2020, didn't we?
Yeah, they haven't got the strap, like, you know, like the wrist strap, which is a bit weird. And I never kind of used to be a fan of it, but now I've sort of got used to it, and they're actually quite nice. They're quite comfy as well. So they've been good.
Good stuff. Second quickfire question is in regards to your favourite ever kit that you've worn. And I'm actually asking this knowing that at the moment, I actually texted you about this today because I saw there's a little thing you put up on Instagram and that you're giving away a kit. And I saw within a few hours, you had over 1,000 comments on your Instagram for people wanting to win your kit. It's a very nice looking one. Is that your favourite ever kit that you've had?
Yeah, I mean, that's not why I'm doing a giveaway, to be fair. But like, it is actually... I like black kits for whatever reason. We had a black kit at West Brom my first season there, which was nice. And then this one is nice as well. But yeah, the MLS this season don't sell goalkeeping jerseys. I can't believe I just called it jersey, but that's what everyone says out here. But yes, they're not selling them, so I'm having to like give some away from the kit man. But yeah, I'd say any black kit is probably my favourite, and this one's right out there.
Good stuff. I think I told you that story about when I walked past someone with a Lee on their shirt. Did I tell you that, Matt? I'm pretty sure I did.
I don't think you did.
If I not, it was quite funny, really, because it was back in the Watford days, and I was injured at the time. I was up in the stands, and I saw there was a girl wearing a Lee kit, and I was obviously having myself a bit at that point, because as I've walked past, a few people kind of recognised me because obviously it was in the Watford end, and I saw someone with a Lee shirt, so I said, oh, I love it, love the shirt, great shirt, I'm glad that you've got my name on the back. And she turned around and said, my surname's Lee. absolutely killed me. Never ever did that again. Anyway, the final of the quickfire questions: what's your favourite ever save? And I know there's plenty to choose from this season, not necessarily the one that everybody knows you for, but the one that you know yourself was your favourite ever save.
It was probably my first championship start. It was like a Friday night game away at Wolves for Watford. I was 19, and it was just a double save that I made kind of 15 minutes in, and I was really nervous for the game naturally, and just having made that save really settled me down and calmed me down. And then I went on to have a run of games. But I ended up having a good game that game. And that kind of set me up for it. And so I think that was probably a big moment in my career. So I'd probably go for... I mean, the first save wasn't actually that good. Didn't put it in a great area, but I got up and made a good second save. But it was just the timing and the moment that was important. So yeah, I'll probably choose that one.
On that, actually, this is a discussion we've had a few times on the Between the Sticks version of this podcast, Bondi, and that is, what constitutes a double save? How long do you reckon you can have between the first and the second save for it to actually be called a double save?
Like 3 seconds, do you think?
See, I think...
It can't be that spaced out.
Exactly. I think if you save it and they get it and dribble a bit and pass and then shoot again and you save it again, that's not... It has to almost be as good as instant. You know, it's a bang, save, bang, save.
Maybe less than 3 seconds then, actually. Yeah, but you would always call it like a double or a triple save if you make sort of 2 or 3 saves in the space of 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, just ramp it up a little bit. I don't know. It's difficult.
Well, this is what the subject of today's pod is going to be. We're going to go through different goalkeeping terms and try and decide what they actually mean. So it should be a lot of fun.
Speaking of terms, you did say jersey, which you flagged yourself there. Have you...
Yeah.
Found yourself referring to football as soccer? Are you wearing cleats and not boots? Have you
saved
switched
a PK?
Lingo?
No, I mean, a shutout I've used a couple of times, nice. Which is obviously means clean sheet. But I, what I tend to do in like the interviews and stuff is just say the English word and then like pretend that it slipped my mind and then go and use the American word so I can get both in. So I'm showing kind of respect for both sides, which sounds a bit weird, but like, I just want to say, I would say it how I would normally say it. And then I say, okay, look, I know you guys call it a locker room instead of a change room, whatever. And just kind of not sound too English. Do you know what I mean? When I'm doing the press conferences or whatever it is out here.
I read somewhere that as a kid, that was something you also not struggled with, but you had to tackle because is it your mum who's from the US? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, she's from Seattle. And then, yeah, she met my dad over in America and she moved over to England. Things like when I was in the academy, she used to call like a wet top, like an anorak. I still don't know what you call it. I think it's called a wet top. But she used to call it a splash jacket. And I remember saying to like one of the boys, like, has anyone seen my splash jacket? And they were like, what are you talking about? I was just like, you know, like the waterproof thing. So yeah, just like things like that, you just learn when you're younger. That's all right. Okay, people don't say it like that.
So we're going to get onto your time at the moment with LA Galaxy. We will journey through some of your career, but yeah, I suppose we can start with that. Are you enjoying life over in LA? It seems like you're absolutely living the dream at the moment.
Honestly, yeah, I'm very happy in all aspects, which is important because, you know, you tend to play well when everything's kind of, when you're happy off the pitch. And my training environment here, the welcome that my teammates, my goalkeeper coach I've got a great relationship with, the manager I've got a great relationship with. And I just felt comfortable from day one, really. As soon as I started, kind of felt like I had a strong pre-season and I wasn't really too worried going into the start of the season. And it's gone well. So, I mean, even off the pitch, like I mentioned, or off the field, there's been, you know, it's took me about a month to settle in, to find somewhere to live, but I did that pretty quickly. Yeah, I've kind of got my routine and my home and my setup and everything's good. So far, so good.
Yeah, well, I've got to ask what the highlight is. And, you know, you're giving a bit of an assessment there. And I have to say that you're being very, very modest. Obviously, keeping a close eye, watching a lot of the games, certainly early on, and actually being quite nervous watching a few of the first games, obviously hoping that you get off to a good start. But to be nearly halfway through the season, to have been MLS Player of the Week for one week in particular, which I think that was the week where you kept a clean sheet, kept a shutout, and made 12 saves in a game, which, am I right in thinking, the one that everyone went mental about with David De Gea against Tottenham, it was 11 saves, wasn't it? Do you remember that game when everyone went crazy about him and they won 1-0? So the fact that you kept a clean sheet, 12 saves, obviously MLS Player of the Week, I know that you're very much in the running for Team of the Year. So many headlines over there, and certainly with the fans really taking to you in the way that they have. Did you, look, is it one of them where you're going into a club, you're wanting to make a good impact? Did you have that kind of feeling that this is how it would play out? And what has been your biggest highlight so far?
Well, I think the preseason is really important, you know, and I felt like I had a strong preseason, and then I just kind of used that momentum going into the season, and I was confident. And we're a team that plays in the front foot. We play open football, possession based. So we're kind of, we're also new. We've got a lot of new players, and we're in a bit of a transitionary moment. So I've been quite busy as well, which can be sometimes a good thing, you know, if you're a new goalkeeper at a new club. I remember when I went to Reading and my first kind of 5-6 games, I was only getting like one or two shots a game. And I remember feeling like you want to feel valued and you want to feel, show your worth, do you know what I mean, at a new club. And I always found that difficult. But here, I was busy from minute one. And you know, it's one thing being busy and then nothing actually, you know, keeping the shots out, which I've managed to do, and kind of grown in confidence. And like you mentioned, the fans really have given me a lot of support. And yeah, and then once you kind of establish yourself after the first 5-6 games, it's just about maintaining that level and keeping it there. And I feel like I've done an okay job of doing that so far.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that because is it still the case that you've made the most saves in the division as of time of recording?
I don't actually know, but I think so. Yeah, I think so. Which is, I think, quite, there was a little bit of a gap.
Yeah, which is quite, I mean, obviously, I suppose credit to you, the fact that you guys are, but it does feel to me that, you know, I talk a lot about goalkeepers fitting certain styles of play. And I give the example of an Edison, you know, certainly fits Man City, given that his distribution is as good as it is and the way in which Pep wants him to play, you know, really seems like it's just the perfect fit. And for a long time, I'd have said that about David De Gea and Manchester United in terms of certain strengths that David De Gea has and certainly had, but I know he's had a bit more of a tough time recently. I kind of feel like there's similarities with you and Galaxy in that the fact that, of course, you enjoy having the ball at your feet in the way that you do and playing the style of football you do. I remember, if I'm right, I remember you played for a Steve Evans team once upon a time. And certainly certainly playing the way that Mr. Evans plays, which is fair to say it's quite direct, given I heard the stat that last year they had one player in particular that had over 100 more flick-ons than any other player in the country.
Wow.
Probably sums up the way in which they play. But then I couldn't ever see you fitting that style of football, whereas the way in which you're playing now, where you're able to play it to that sitting midfielder, obviously clipping it to fullbacks, wingers, you know, the ability to express yourself a little bit more seems to work.
Yeah, I think expressing myself is for sure what I've been allowed to do. I feel the trust of the manager. He gives me kind of complete trust in possession and gives me a lot of responsibility. So I'm sort of playing most of the time with the ball, a lot of the time actually outside of my box and like helping in the build up, like approaching the midfield third sometimes. And yeah, kind of, it's another one of those things, you know, at the start, you know, the first couple of games, you don't try and wrap things into midfielders. But once I kind of established that confidence and the trust of my teammates and learning what, how they like to receive, you know, who's more comfortable receiving passes and what areas of the pitch. Yeah, now I feel like you said, it kind of, it suits my style, I think. And I just feel comfortable playing that way. I've never felt like I enjoyed just kind of teeing it up on the 6-yard box and just kicking it as far as I can into the wind under Steve Evans. So yeah, I'm enjoying it, and hopefully we continue to keep doing what we're doing.
It's amazing how often Steve Evans crops up on this podcast, Rich, by the way, isn't it?
he always manages to weave
his way into a podcast, Steve Evans.
It's true. I feel like I might have given that stat about the flick-ons before. He fascinates me. Yeah. That's what it is. He fascinates me. No, but actually, do you know what, on that note, and I guess, look, this is a question that we do ask a lot of our guests in terms of managers that they've played for and different styles. And look, do you know what, Steve Evans, in fairness to him, he's had a lot of success. Of course he has. So he's got a certain style of manager that's certain goalkeepers do appreciate, and some have flourished under him and done very well, whereas others really haven't. You know, there's no right or wrong necessarily, but I'd be right in saying that the environment you're in at the moment, you do seem to be really enjoying how the manager, the relationship you have with the manager, whereas, again, knowing you personally in the way that I do, I get the impression there's been times before where perhaps you haven't felt as wanted.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to, you know, the Steve Evans thing, like some people just prefer the clearness of mind and simplicity. Like, everyone knows what you're doing, and it just makes everything a lot more, it just simplifies things, basically. So there's literally nothing wrong with that. It's just kind of, you always enjoy what you're good at. And I've always felt comfortable playing out, and like, I enjoy it. And maybe one of my strengths isn't just going long all the time, you know, and if one of your strengths is hitting the other edge of the box kind of thing, then you're going to want to do that most of the time. So it's just about different styles and ways of playing. But yeah, I mean, feeling wanted, I think any player would say that's how every player wants to feel. And I felt that from minute one, speaking to head of recruitment here when we were close to getting it done, and then coming in, speaking to the manager, the goalkeeping coach, and I just felt like I had their trust, and you know, I felt wanted, like you say, and that immediately, you know, gives you some responsibility as well. And I've enjoyed that for sure from the second I got here.
Is it fair to say, and you can completely shut me down on this one, Bondi, but is it the first time in your career that you felt really, really wanted? I know that managers, of course, have wanted you at clubs before, but is this the first time now at this stage in your career that you really feel like you are the established number one, like the manager has full faith in you?
Yeah, I mean, if you take loans out of it, where they clearly want you because they bring you in on loan, and in terms of my parent clubs, I kind of feel like I've dropped into a bit of a category where, like, the managers are seeing what I can do in training and stuff, but it's just that extra leap to maybe make a big decision and then put me in. And look, I'm not saying it's completely like their responsibility, or maybe I needed to do more at the time when I was younger. But I just felt like there was a few times where I could have maybe had a break and it maybe didn't come. I mean, a good example of that is the last 2.5 years at West Brom. Sam Johnson, he didn't miss one game. And I think he missed the game the weekend after I made my transfer to Galaxy because he had a positive COVID test, which is like typical. But for that 2.5 years, he literally didn't miss a league game. And I felt like every time I came into playing in the cups and stuff, I was doing really well. So I felt like I was applying pressure, and you know, in the cup games and then in training. But sometimes it just takes a little bit more than that to force a manager's hand to make a decision. So yeah, I mean, in terms of feeling wanted and being a number one, yeah, I'd say it's the first time where I've felt the full backing of everyone.
It's an intriguing situation, this, and Rich, you might want to jump in at some point, because I have actually got a few stats. It's been a while since we've done one of these pods, Rich, so indulge me, if you will. So 36 appearances I've got in the Championship. You had 40 appearances in League One, 15 appearances in the FA Cup, and a few EFL Cup games thrown in there too. Now, when Reading signed you, Steve Clark said, "I'm delighted that we have managed to secure the signature of one of English football's brightest young goalkeepers. You did seem to be highly rated everywhere you went. I remember the hype about you going to certain clubs, But it was almost like you're saying there, that catch-22 situation where you were highly rated, but there was always an obstacle in front of you. And it was difficult, therefore, to get a move in England because I guess people hadn't seen you play enough. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think looking back, when I was kind of 18, 19, that's when I was really in the first team squad at Watford. And what ended up happening was I was kind of second choice, but I was behind number one that was always getting injured in Manuel Almunia and then even Aurelio Gomez. So I was never really allowed to go out on loan like some other goalkeepers that I've seen and play kind of like a full season out on loan where you learn so much, because they always wanted me there to kind of step in and play like 10, 15 games that season or whatever it was, however many games they were missing. And like that kept happening for like two or three seasons in a row. You know, I was involved with England under 21s and stuff, which is great. And it bigs up your profile and all that. And then the move to Reading came about. And I just feel like maybe I needed that season on loan before I made a move where, you know, the safety net's really removed from me, because in Watford were then a Premier League club. And I'm now going back to a Championship club where it's not like I'm a homegrown. They're buying me in. And there were just certain things where maybe a couple of areas where I wasn't ready. But there was also, when I look back, I probably needed a little bit more support than what I got at the age of 21, 22 at Reading when I first moved there. Since I've made a couple more moves and I've seen the support other goalkeepers have had at certain clubs, I don't feel like I got that at Reading when maybe I needed it. And anyway, that turned out to be a difficult couple of years, but probably a couple of years where I learned the most out of any other years that I spent being a professional, for sure.
Is it fair to say that Reading, you mentioned you didn't necessarily get the support. You obviously went on several loans, which we'll discuss. But is it fair to say that you had some of your more difficult times at Reading?
Yeah, 100%. I feel, you know, maybe physically I wasn't in the best place going into that. And it was just difficult. It was just like a change. I mentioned the safety net kind of gets removed and you're on your own. And yeah, the first season, I played a decent amount of games, but it was difficult. I think the team wasn't doing great. We had a good start, but then after that, kind of like averagely. It was Ali Alhabsi as well was the other goalkeeper, and we were kind of fighting for a spot. It was like I started, then he was in, then I came back in, he was back in. And then the second season was tough because I just couldn't. I didn't stay fit. I basically had a really unlucky season with injuries. That season went by very quickly, having not much involvement. And then suddenly you're in the last year of your contract, and I needed to make sure I played games that season. That's when I went out and played 40 odd games for Peterborough in League One, which was another good experience and something that I wish I'd done been allowed to do when I was at Watford. So it kind of went by quickly. You know, the first season was difficult, but at least I still, you know, I play games. Second season, injuries killed me really. And then before you know it, third season, I've got to make sure I'm playing and playing games. So I had a successful loan out at Peterborough.
And this is what, I mean, fascinates me when it comes to probably goalkeeping, maybe more than any other position, in that you mentioned that in your last year, and again, knowing you as I do, I knew that in your last year, it was always likely that you were going to be released. Whereas now, you know, a lot of clubs will try and retain some sort of value, try and get a sell on, try and get something when an asset leaves. But it was kind of well known that you were always going to leave and likely leave for nothing. Obviously, you had your loans. And actually, just to quickly mention, and you'll enjoy this, Matt, I always try and bring this up whenever I can. I did play against Jonathan Bonn once.
There we go. Okay. Go on, where?
It was when he was on loan at Bury. It was Brentford versus Bury. I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Bondi, but I think it was 3-0 to the Bees that day.
Yeah, you were better than us that day, for sure. I think I did all right, though, that game.
Matt looks incredible. You did well, you played really well, but Matt looks very confused.
Yeah. When was this?
When was this, Bondi? 2010?
I was 18. Yeah, I think 2010.
So this was 11. Actually on loan from Watford. Sorry, this, I've got my timelines all over the place here.
That's on loan from Watford. Yeah,
do you know what?
Right.
So, I mean, me bringing this up at this point in the pod made no sense whatsoever, but I just wanted to make sure that I brought it up at some point in the pod.
Well, no, do you know what?
Go on.
Do you know what's pretty insane about this?
Go on.
This isn't even set up. I think I was at that game.
Really?
I think I was at that game. We're talking 3-0. So at home.
Yeah.
7th of April 20.
Sam Saunders.
Yes, he scored a really good. Yeah, yeah. He, like, I remember the goal. and then I think a right back scored. Yes, I was at that game.
Well, there you go.
Jay Bond. Can you believe it? There he is.
There he
is.
That
is amazing.
That's the one game we played against each other, which again has no part to what I'm actually talking about right now, because I was mentioning your last season at Reading. So I'm miles off here. However, my point was going to be, it's just fascinating to me, and that actually this is where, how often do you see this? Where, look, Reading deemed you surplus to requirements. You weren't for them, and yet you see what you're doing now. You see the fact that even when you left Reading, the fact that West Brom, who, well, arguably bigger club, came in for you and you know, could see something in you that maybe Reading didn't see. And for me, again, just having seen how the last few years have gone, that was a key moment for you, going to West Brom. And actually, interestingly, and not many people will know this, and I'm not sure you don't mind me saying, Bondi, but you had the opportunity to go to Bradford that summer as well. And of course, there were two very different options, similar in certain ways, similar in terms of maybe financially, but it was, do you go to a West Brom and try and fight for your place, or go to Bradford, who are a league lower, guaranteed to be number one, and go down that route? Now, it's just funny how things work out, given that since then, Bradford have had a really tough time. They've gone down to League Two, of course. And of course, you then at West Brom, although you didn't get necessarily the game time, that has now led to you going to the Galaxy. And it's kind of a sliding doors moment to an extent. You do just wonder, had you have chosen Bradford at that time, whether everything would look that much different right now?
Yeah, I mean, that is, when you think about it, it's weird to, it is strange. But the main thing about the West Brom decision was Neil Cutler, who was the goalkeeper coach at the time. And he was the one that really pushed for the club to sign me. And he kind of had, I think it was kind of left to him to make decisions on, you know, recruiting goalkeepers. And I know you had a good relationship with Cuts, and you'd worked, or maybe not worked together actually before, but you'd worked with goalkeepers who had worked with him before. And, you know, truly he was a huge person in my development, and kind of frustrating as well, because, you know, if only I'd had that input in my game, you know, 5-6 years earlier. Yeah, I just find that very, very frustrating. But it was, I mean, to be fair, we were only together for 6 months actually at West Brom, and then he moved on. But even in that 6 months, I learned so much. And obviously Gary Walsh came in after, and he kept that going and improved it massively. But just to go from where I was, for Cuts to have that much of an impact on my game, yeah, it was, I suddenly felt at such a different level than what I'd been the last few years. And I felt kind of ready to go again, even though I didn't have a platform necessarily to show the level that I was at, which was the only frustrating thing. And you're kind of relying on people to not just go on Y-Scout and watch games like at Reading, where maybe I was like struggling with whatever. And just like, that's 2-3 years ago. And it's funny how like you can change as a goalkeeper so quickly within 4, 5, 6 months, but people's perceptions can take a long time to get shifted and change. But that's just how it is.
Yeah, just to jump on that, I mean, and I think so many goalkeepers listening in will have so much sympathy for you there, in that it's amazing once a reputation has been given, how difficult that really can be to shift. And it was, you know, interesting that you talk to people, and a lot of people will bring back that time at Reading where, as you say, maybe you had a tough time for a short period of time. But it's amazing how, say, a short period, the amount of people that will remember that and maybe forget, you know, a lot of the fantastic things that you've done, or not necessarily look by them. But I guess that's maybe just human nature as well. It's very easy just to sum something up and to put it in a box and leave it there, as opposed to actually, as you mentioned, going through. And actually, I think this is where giving credit to Neil Cutler again is that he looked at it slightly differently from memory, where he looked at you as in terms of the attributes you had, and kind of saw it almost as a project. Like, what could he do with what you've got? You know, 6'5", you've got the ability to kick with accuracy, go long, crosses solid, et cetera, play on the front foot, all these different things that you want in a goalkeeper. Then it was for him to try and mold you and do something with you. And I guess maybe, again, that is the, you look at the top goalkeeper coaches out there, it's the ability to see something in a goalkeeper and know that you can find a way to unlock it.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to the forming of perceptions thing, like if I had gone to Reading, for example, on loan from a Man United or a Chelsea or something, you can afford sometimes for things not to go brilliantly. But I think there was probably quite a few people interested to see how I would do. And then just because I had a difficult 6 months or whatever it was in that season, yeah, like you say, perceptions, oh, okay, decision made. Yeah, okay, whatever. But, and then it's very difficult to shift that. But like you say, Cuts kind of looked at the bigger picture. And yeah, and that's the thing. I think he just looked at kind of the attributes, like you mentioned. And we, I mean, we trained hard. That's the hardest I've trained. I was felt really fit, felt powerful, quick. And we had a strong preseason. Even just mindset stuff as well, like mentally kind of put me into I was going into games with more of a positive mindset than a fearful mindset, you know, which is something that I just hadn't been introduced to. I hadn't been thought of it. I was always, without realizing it, playing in more of a fear state than a positive state, if that makes any sense at all. And he kind of shifted that as well. So really in every aspect of my game, he had a huge impact. And to be honest, it all happened very quickly. Like after 4 months I was training with, I just felt like I felt a lot more freedom in what I was doing. I just felt like everything had been unlocked.
You give me an opportunity to talk about mindset, so I'm going to jump all over that. But you're right. Look, I think, again, most goalkeepers listening in, the amount of goalkeepers that will play a game with the aim of just not making a mistake, as opposed to going out there and wanting to positively influence the game. I mean, even something you said earlier, and I was of the exact same mindset when I played, that let's say you're playing a game and you went 1-0 down and it wasn't your fault, let's say, for instance. It was then a slightly different feeling for me, because it was almost like, oh, okay, we're going to attack now because we need to get something back. So if anything, the pressure's off a little bit. So when you made that comment earlier in the pod, I could fully understand, because I had that for a long, long time. And again, it's just a mentality. You look at it logically, it makes no difference whether you're, you know, 1-0 up, 1-0 down, 5-0 up, 5-0 down. It makes no difference. You're still playing a game of football for 90 minutes and you're giving the best you can. And again...
Yeah, no... I agree, you know, in general, but like as an 18-year-old kid at the time, yeah. I'm just saying the game went that way, where we were 1-0 down and most of the game was played at the other end. But I agree with you. Like the positive mindset, I mean, the difference that made to me was huge. Sorry, I cut you off, mate. Go on.
No, that's right. No, because what you just said there, then that's it. That's it. It's just a shift, because then actually it does. It just, you take a slightly different mentality towards what you do. Having the positive mindset of wanting the challenge, wanting to be 1-0 up, wanting to have the perceived pressure that might come with having to defend a lead, and actually like relishing that. And me watching you now, I can sense that you've got that type of mindset, certainly given the number of games that Galaxy have had already this season where you've won by the odd goal and they've been tight games and you've had to make big saves at big moments. You know, even that term big save, for me, it's more a case of being in a really fit state of mind in key moments, you know, not allowing pressure to get to you and making the wrong decision, or not necessarily being able to harness that type of power when you need it to make the dive and make that big save, in inverted commas. But the amount of saves you seem to have made late in games, or saves that have won Galaxy the game this season, it really feels like you're playing with that energy.
Yeah, I do feel that now, for sure. But I think, you know, going back, just having this conversation makes me think, going back, some of the experiences you get scars, you get kind of like emotional scars, especially when I was younger and I made a few mistakes. And then I think, oh, I don't want to do that again. And that can, if you don't have someone, first of all, you can have it in yourself, or you can have it in a coach that says, look, it's not about like one game where you make a mistake. It's about what you do over the course of the season. It's how you train every day. And like, just not fixating so much on mistakes was something that I shifted for sure under Cuts. And I don't want to make this whole podcast about Cuts, obviously, but it was just the moment where my mindset shifted, and going into other games. Now, it's not like not everything's gone perfectly, like it never does, but I'm aware that it's not just about one moment or one game. It's about, you know, how are you over the course of 40 games, however many games. So, yeah, it's just taking it with a little bit of a pinch of salt sometimes.
I'm just wondering how we title this podcast, whether it is the Jonathan Bond podcast or just a tribute to Neil Cutler. I'm not sure.
Well, I won't mention him anymore.
No, that's it. That's it. Done.
He listens in, to be fair. So
he does. He listens to everyone. Yeah. So I feel like, I don't know whether I need to text him to tell him to listen, but I know he'll listen regardless. So a tribute to Neil Cutler.
Just to tie up this point, I suppose, there was another word that you used there, Bondi, and that was unlocked. And I think that's mirrored in both your performances and your mindset as well, because again, from a goalkeeper's perspective, it's almost something that we only ever see as goalkeepers, these goalkeepers that essentially need to be unlocked. And we see so many examples. If we pluck one out, say Emi Martinez. So at Arsenal for so long, went to Reading like you did. His was on loan as opposed to a permanent move, but was at Arsenal for so long, managed to finally get his break only because Bernd Leno got injured in his late 20s. All of a sudden, wow, who's this guy? £20 million later, he's at Aston Villa, he's winning the Copa America with Argentina, and everyone goes, this guy's a world-class goalkeeper. It's almost like now you've got that opportunity that he's got, and everyone goes, oh, right, this lad's actually quite decent.
Yeah. I think, I don't know how many games Emi had played before last season, but like I don't think it was more than 100, I don't think. And I think Alisson was the same. Like, I think he played like one season in, you guys will have to Google it or whatever, but it wasn't like they played loads of games. I think they played one season in Brazil and then maybe one or two in Roma, and then suddenly he's the world's most expensive goalkeeper at Liverpool. And I just find those instances interesting because it's not like they had 300 games behind them where a club's then gone, like a big club has gone, bang, okay, you know, this is our goalkeeper. So sometimes it's not always that you need 250, 300 games. It's just you might get, like Alisson might get his break at Roma or wherever it is, or like Martinez got his break at Arsenal. And I'm just now grateful that Greg and Kevin, the goalkeeper coach and the manager here, have given me a chance to come here and give me like a platform to at least express myself and play. Because at the end of the day, it's so competitive now. There's just so few spots that it's difficult to get that platform. And it's not really conducive to sometimes, you know, goalkeepers, I'm sure, will be out there that do get the platform, but you might only get it for five games, and like five games is just not enough. You need someone to back. You need to feel the confidence of the manager. And yeah, it's just, that's just how football is sometimes. It doesn't come perfectly.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's again, a subject that we talk about a lot on the Between the Sticks that we do. And we use the word narrative a lot, and you talked about reputation earlier, and it's interesting how some will very early on build a really positive narrative. And because there aren't many, and again, this is just purely a personal opinion, but because there aren't many stats out there that are deemed, I suppose, worthy, for want of a better word, where, you know, you've got the goals against, expected goals against is quite an interesting one. And of course, you've got your kind of standard save percentage, but so many of them you can look into and you can question for various reasons. So more often than not, it is purely opinion that goalkeepers are built and goalkeepers crumble on. And so if you can build that positive opinion, you've got people talking about you in such a positive light. And you know what? A lot of people find themselves being guilty of it, where then they'll be asked, oh, what do you think of such and such? And you might just regurgitate an opinion that you've heard from someone else, or I've heard he's this, that, the other. And before you know it, it builds. You know, it's not even real, but this idea builds. Yeah. And again, this goes back to those fine lines. You know, we talk about the fact that, you know, you're very close to joining Bradford, and no disrespect to Bradford, but, you know, whether you'd have been able to keep him up that season or not, who knows? But had you not, you could have been, again, playing in League Two. And then, who knows, you lose your place in League Two. There's so many different situations recently we've talked about. Neil Etheridge playing in the Prem, Jack Butland playing in the Prem, then getting relegated into the Champ, and for one reason or another, then losing their place in the Champ, and suddenly it's that much more difficult to get back to the Premier League. So it's... It just seems with goalkeepers, a lot of the time it can be literally moments, you know, certain things going in their way, going against them, that can change everything. Emi Martinez, great example, really is, in that, just from, again, a lot of people in the goalkeeping community were aware of how good he was, but it's always that unknown. Until you do it in the Premier League, it's almost got a premium to it. You do it in the Premier League for a handful of games, and suddenly you've ticked that box, and now that adds an extra zero onto your price tag. It's just, you know, even in the current window, you know, we're seeing the figures. Bearing in mind that Championship and below, there's not been a fee of over £500,000, I don't think, yet you've got the likes of Sam Johnson, Aaron Ramsdale, that are being quoted at 10, 15, 20, 30 million pounds. It's almost that Premier League tax, yet you do wonder, are the goalkeepers in the Championship that could go up and perform to that level? But again, if you haven't done it, the argument will always be, we just don't know.
Yeah, opinions is like, it is so much on opinions. I'm not huge on the stats, but like, I mean, sometimes like even just the way you look, the way you hold yourself, the way you come across, like during games and stuff, and just before you've even done anything, can affect people's opinions when they're watching. But then if you're a stat person, it's like, oh, oh, Bondi, you've made, like, you mentioned about making the most saves in the MLS, but like, that doesn't say anything, really. Like, every shot might have been from 40 yards and I could just pat it down. You know, like, no one knows what kind of shots they are and the difficulty of the shots and even the expected goals stuff. Like, that's probably the most accurate thing we've got, would you say? Like, the stopped expected goals against. But like, even that, what, you know, one goalkeeper might get a first-time shot from the six-yard box right at him, and then the next goalkeeper might get the exact same position, same shot, but it comes off his, like, toe and goes into the corner and, like, hits the post and goes in. And there's just nothing. It's just one goalkeeper got lucky because, do you know what I mean? It's not, obviously, yeah, I'm not right. saying well, it's
you
all
could,
about luck.
You could have
someone, it's just
shoot,
so hard to measure.
You could have someone shoot from 30 yards, an unstoppable shot in the top corner, and because of the scoring system being what it is, you would be marked down massively. As if, but similarly, you could have 20 shots from 30 yards that all bobble into your hands, you know? So, and yeah. Or like you say, someone shooting from 2 yards, which will be deemed as definitely a goal, and they miss kick it and again scuff it and you just pick it up, but that gives you a high score. So it's tough. I mean, the idea is that over time it should even itself out. But of course, there are reasons why it does. And that's why it's always so difficult. It's so different with a game like baseball where, you know, and of course they love their stats. And there you go, talking American again. But they love their stats there. But it's so much simpler, I guess, in that it is a pitch and it's a hit. Whereas with goalkeeping, there are so many grey areas. So many. You even mentioned body language there. That is a big part as well. Because, of course, how you hold yourself, how you look, that will have an impact, obviously, on yourself first and foremost, but your teammates in terms of their feeling towards you. If you look big, strong, confident. Similarly, the opposition, if they know they're coming up against the, what is it they call you, the Bond wall? I'm trying to think. By the way, I've got to touch on, I keep seeing the wall. That's kind of the nickname you've got, it seems. But the other one is, and the amount of people that the whole J Bond thing, I mean, that's actually done you a bit of a favour, I feel.
Yeah, they're huge on marketing and stuff out here. So like any headline, any like anything they can get, they use that. Like, that's perfect for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
makes a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, it has helped.
Yeah, but now going back to the point, I mean, you made so many, and that's the thing. I think that's where, you know, and ultimately it will come down to opinion, but then it's the opinion of who, and I suppose a big thing without, you know, we go over this a lot on our weekly show, in that there are a lot out there maybe giving opinions on goalkeepers who it could be argued aren't qualified to do so. So it's quite nice going back to, in fact, I'm going to mention his name one more time, but the fact that Neil Cutler, as an example, drove your move so heavily, for me, was quite nice, because I would rather, in a perfect world, goalkeeper coaches at every single club back their own judgment and were able to have the final say on goalkeepers, because it baffles me how a head of recruitment will often have the final say, or a manager will often have the final say. And again, the idea being that there are so many different things to look at in terms of what makes a top quality goalkeeper and what makes a goalkeeper fit a certain team.
I mean, the other thing is, like, some goalkeepers, it's not really happened to me, but where a manager has taken a goalkeeper out of the team just because he's not understanding maybe why a couple of goals have gone in. And as a goalkeeper, you know, no, that's because, like, he couldn't see it, or it went through the defender's legs or whatever it is. And sometimes managers can just lose patience with goalkeepers because they just don't understand, like, the position, or they're just not doing it. It might be something that they're not happy with, but they don't even know what it is that they're not happy with. And they just go for another goalkeeper. And it's frustrating when you get, I mean, luckily I haven't, like, my manager here has been great, but, like, I know that they are, that lack of understanding can kill goalkeepers sometimes from the head coach. And yeah, I mean, from a recruitment side of things as well, like, that can be, it's a strange one. If a head of recruitment who, I mean, some head of recruitments have never played professionally before, you know, let alone dealt with, you know, professional goalkeeping, and they're the ones making the final decisions on goalkeepers. Like, that's, I find that like a little bit strange, but yeah, that's just how it is.
You mentioned stats there as well. Now, we know that is such a huge part of the game now. If we stick with that US theme and the attention paid to that in sports such as baseball and NFL, like Rich has already mentioned, is that now applied in such detail to football, both stats and analytics? I mean, are you given, I don't know, a wealth of information prior to games?
In terms of the analysis of the opposition, like, it's no different to England. It's not like an overload of information or technology or anything like that. But in terms of the stats, like, yeah, that is massive. they're always bringing up stats. They're always tweeting or like in interviews and stuff, they'll mention them, they'll relate back to them. And they could be like any stat. It can just be like goals conceded. And I just think like we've conceded more goals than we should have this season. But like I've personally been feeling like I've been playing really well. And there's only so much you can do as a goalkeeper. You can only move the needle so much. You know, if the team just isn't functioning defensively or whatever, then you can have problems. But like sometimes it might be positive where they say, oh, you've like we said earlier, you saved the most shots in the whole league. And I'm sat there like a little bit embarrassed because I'm thinking, well, that shows, first of all, that like we're not defensively, we're not doing things properly. And second of all, it doesn't actually say anything like about the saves that I've made. So it is a strange one. I'm not a huge fan of them, but I guess maybe if you're recruiting goalkeepers, you want to have like one eye on the stats, and then having watched him for, I don't know, 50 games, it is difficult to quantify or to measure goalkeeping. It's very difficult.
Do you do your own analysis stuff? We get a lot of goalkeepers who talk about the fact they do it in their own time and look at opposition. Are you big on that in terms of looking at what players are doing?
When I was at Peterborough, I went on Y Scout for every game. I watched basically anyone who could play in the like front four or five positions. And I watched like their last 20 or 30 shots. It took me ages. Honestly, it took me ages. And then I think looking back, I think even maybe halfway through that season, I realized it's just honestly the biggest waste of time because like, no situation is ever the same. Like sort of picked up a few patterns on some of the stuff, but then I'm not present in the moment in the game because I'm thinking, oh, well, the last 20 shots, this guy's cut in and he's gone far post. Well, what if he pulls it in the near? You know, and I'm anticipating and like I'm not concentrating on just staying present and being reactive in the goal. So now I kind of want to know if a midfielder shoots with a knuckleball, for example, from like 25 yards, or if someone comes in and literally puts it in the far corner all the time. But otherwise, now I try and stay away from it a little bit so that I'm not thinking too much whilst I'm playing. I'm just reacting.
Trying to evade Tamás, but he turns it around the corner. Good overlap from Dembélé. Dembélé's cross, and it's touched back. What a save from Jonathan Bond. How on earth did he keep that out? No one in this stadium can believe Jonathan Bond has kept that out.
Going all the way back, obviously, you did play for England 21s. You made quite a few appearances for them.
Yeah, I made a few. I mean, the whole thing was just a great experience, to be honest. Like, we were training every day with, half the England team now. Was our team Harry Kane, Jesse Lingard, Nathan Redmond, John Stones, Luke Shaw, Wilf Zaha, Ravel Morrison was there. I'm missing out probably a lot of names, to be honest, in there. But I just enjoyed it. I don't know, just like the sharpness of it, the speed of the ball, like speed. Everything was about speed and quickness of thought. And I think everyone will say when they play with better players, it brings your level up. And I always felt like it did. And then, yeah, I was lucky enough to play. I think Jack Butland was like the number one at the time. He'd come through the lower age group. So I had changed from Wales and it was a good experience. It was always something I looked forward to going away during the season. And I came back with like a newfound level of confidence every time when I came back to my club. So, yeah, and Steve Holland and Gareth Southgate were the coaches as well, who are obviously still the coaches now. So it was a high standard for sure.
You are, of course, Bondi, a goal-scoring stopper. We've had a few on the podcast, but you mentioned Wales there. Yeah. It was an under-17 game, is that right? Scored a goal.
Yeah. I think we were 1-0 down to Russia, and we needed to score to go through like to the Euros or something. I can't remember now. But it just dropped like from a corner, and then I just kind of like spun on it and put it in the bottom corner, which sounds like I'm exaggerating, but I can send you the video or whatever. But that is genuinely what happened.
You can tell he's told the story many times.
Yeah. I did. I spun on it and put it in the bottom corner, but I was buzzing after that. I was buzzing for like 2 weeks after that. It was the best feeling ever.
I have had a look, to be fair. I can't find it anywhere. So if you've got a video, please do.
Yeah, I've got a video. Don't worry.
Oh, perfect.
I'll send it.
It's my favourite. As well, I said multinational. So you've represented both Wales and England at youth level, but you could also represent the US and even Spain. Whereabouts are you at on your international movements? Are you still thinking about that?
I don't know. It's been asked a few times here just because I have the American passport, but it's a difficult one. Like, I feel a little bit aggrieved by it, because when I was 15 or 16, we got told to literally just write down any country that you're eligible for on a piece of paper. And that was that. And then next thing I know, I'd been called to this camp for Wales under 16s, I think. And I just went. Like, what an experience. Well, like, what an opportunity at 16 to go to like an international camp. But no one really sat me down and said, by the way, you know, this will tie you in now, like, to one confederation. So obviously I had a great experience at Wales, playing 16, 17s, 19s, 21s. And then I was even called up to a first team squad once. But then changing over to England was, I mean, if someone was to ask me, I feel very much half English, half American. My dad's English, my mum's American. Obviously, I've got the Spain and the Welsh there as well, but that's what I feel. So having had a good experience with after changing to England, it's a shame now that I don't even have the option of considering the US. At least I don't think I've got the option of changing to US. So it's a bit of a strange one, because it's a decision you make when you're 15, 16, and it really impacts you further down in your career. And that doesn't seem fair to me. So, but yeah, it is what it is.
Just a quick one on that one, because I suppose not a lot of people will be too aware of that, but it's, from what we understand, you got a one-time switch when it comes to your national team. Did you know that, Matt?
One-time switch. We're at competitive level. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was, I know we've discussed this, Bondi, privately, in that, yeah, but that's essentially it. Once he'd play for Wales, then to go to England, that's the one-time switch. So even now.
So he can't switch now.
No. So even now, okay. Of America, that's how we understand it. But it'd be very interesting, obviously, especially given America's recent success, obviously, at the Gold Cup. And, you know, they've got some good goalkeepers in Zach Steffen, of course, and Matt Turner, who I believe did very well in the Gold Cup. Obviously, Ethan Horvath, who's now found his way over here as well. But it'd be really interesting to see where you were in that pecking order. But I suppose at the moment, it's a non-starter.
So we'll finish then with the fact that you are now in LA. I'm just keen to find out what the attitude is towards goalkeepers, and I suppose football in general, or what you've experienced in your time there so far, because it is a bigger sport than it used to be, and a discussion that's come up so many times. But I always look at, and this could be incredibly ignorant of me, I always look at football here, and it's so hardcore, it's so tense, it's so passionate. You know, for some people it can literally ruin an entire week. Is it the same over there, and do you get that same feeling from fans, or is it more about the occasion and going out for the day, a bit like baseball and NFL?
There's kind of a mixture of the two. So the Galaxy Stadium is down in Carson, it's a place called Carson, and there's a real heavily influenced Latin area. So it's very Latin American. And that demographic of the fan base is hugely passionate. And they have different fan groups around the stadium, and they make a lot of noise. But then you also get, because you're in LA, you know, a lot of people are always visiting, coming to the game. So you kind of get more of like an exhibition-y feel on your normal game, maybe like a normal Saturday 7:30 PM game. Everything's kind of a lot more positive. There's a lot more patience. The game's allowed to breathe. You know, we're allowed to play in a certain way out from the back and all that kind of stuff. And you can kind of get it wrong a few times compared to if you try and do that in England, you just got your own fans just absolutely like battering you for passing it back to the goalkeeper like for the fourth time. So like there's kind of pros and cons that come with it. I think people maybe look at like the lack of relegation here as being a bad thing, but at the same time it makes everything less short-termist, if that makes sense. Like in England, the managers are under so much pressure to get results straight away. You put less faith in younger players. You have to get results quicker. There's not enough time to establish a philosophy. All of those things you can do here, and the managers get a lot more time to do it. So the end product can sometimes be better than what you see in maybe like the Championship, for example, in England. And yeah, like you say, it is growing. The game days they feel like big events. The stadiums are getting good attendances. The league is competitive. And yeah, I mean, there are like challenges here that you just don't get in England. For example, we had a 3-game away trip where we flew to Salt Lake, which is kind of like 40 degrees and at altitude, or 37 degrees and at altitude. We played 2 games there. We played Vancouver, because we're not allowed to play in Canada at the moment because of COVID. And we played Salt Lake, both in Salt Lake. So those games back to back, 3 days within each other, was tough, especially, and obviously, for the outfield boys. And then we flew straight from Salt Lake to Dallas to play in 40, 41 degree heat. It was like playing in an oven. So humid. Like, you can't, it takes you ages to recover and get your breath. And the games, you almost have to play the game like with that in mind. You have to play it at walking pace sometimes, like keeping the ball, keeping possession, not giving it away, making the other team run. And you just don't get those kinds of challenges in England. Like, it just gets cold, but that's about it. You can still run in the cold. So it's been, yeah, it's been really interesting from so many different aspects. And it is, like you say, it's growing all the time.
Well, I've got two more quick questions until I get to my final question, the same final question that we ask every one of our guests. But one of them, and you just kind of mentioned it there a little bit, but is there anything about the lifestyle now? In fact, I'll ask this slightly differently. Is there anything you miss about the English lifestyle?
No, there isn't, honestly.
Not at all. No, you're not bored of living on a beach and you know, 30 degree heat every day, no?
No, honestly, like I'm not. It's, I don't know. I've never been someone to get homesick, even when I was moving around England. But like coming to America, like how cold it is there, how dark it gets, how quickly it gets dark, how short the summers are. There's just less to do. Because I guess that's because, like, as a result of the weather throughout most of the year, there's everything to do here. You know, if you want to go to the beach, you can go to the beach. There's constant attractions coming up all the time. There's restaurants everywhere. There's different parts of LA. You can go up into the valley. There's amazing like lakes and stuff. I mean, you can go, if you really want to go, you can go to the mountains. There's loads of places to hike and it's endless. It's endless, really. You've got mountains, you've got sea, beach, you've got a city. So yeah, you're never short of stuff to do. And obviously every day waking up, it's sunny. Everyone's in a much better mood. It's a very positive and enthusiastic culture here, which isn't so much in England. But yeah, look, obviously I miss the English people, English sense of humour and that kind of stuff, for sure. But in terms of like lifestyle, not really, no.
Don't try and claw it back now with a sense of humour and all that stuff. I was enjoying this podcast.
I know. I feel depressed. Although actually, do you know what I say that? I read today that actually in a couple of weeks, they reckon we might have a few days of a heat wave.
Ooh.
Might even get to the kind of level that LA is all year round. We might have, summer's finally going to come late August.
Lucky you boys.
There you go. And I bet you know how you feel, Jonas, don't you, Bondi?
Whereabouts are you actually in LA?
So, I mean, I don't know how well you know LA, but like where I am is like near Century City. So it's kind of like 15 minutes from the beach. And then you're kind of 10 minutes from, you're 5 minutes from Beverly Hills, 10 minutes from West Hollywood and all that kind of stuff. So it's always stuff to do. And it takes me about 25 minutes to get into training. Well, so it's not bad.
Well, I've got one more before I do ask final question. That is obviously the games you're playing. There's been the odd one that have been convenient times here where I think like the first one you played into Miami had a good victory in your first game and the time worked out really nicely where I think it was an 8 o'clock kickoff or something here from memory. But the majority of your games are sort of 3-4 in the morning. Do your friends or does your mum stay up to watch every game or is it a case of waking up in the morning or they wake up in the morning and plenty of texts coming a few hours after the game?
Yeah, my mum and my sister, they stay up for every game. So they're up at like 3, 4 a.m. sometimes. Yeah, they love it. Like, it's amazing. Like a fun thing that they do. And I think they go to sleep and then wake up and then go back to sleep. I'm not sure. Cool. But they watch every game. And then my one of my best mates, Lewis, then Ollie and Adam Thompson played at Watford. They started off like the first 8 games, I'd say, they watched. And then I was thinking, how long are they going to keep this up for? And it slowly, it tailed off. And now they just watch the highlights when they wake up, which is fair enough.
Could I tell you a secret, actually? There was one game that I really wanted to stay up for. And look, anyone that knows me, I'm asleep by 9:30 most evenings. You know, I'm not great. Yeah. So a late night for me is 10, 10:30. So there was one game that I was desperate to watch. And so I actually scheduled it where before I went to bed, I paused Sky on the channel that it was due to be on. So how did I do this again? I can't think, but I managed to somehow pause it so that it paused at the very start of the game. I was unable to wake up properly at the start of the second half. And then I could watch the game on time 6. and just gradually go through it. And then when you had involvements, I could enjoy your involvements and then kind of rewind, watch it again. But it just meant that, because waking up at 4 a.m, it ruins me, certainly, for like 2 days.
Yeah.
So I realised early on when I stayed up for a couple that it's very, very difficult.
No, it is. It's tough. But the thing is, I think they would have early, like at the start of the season, for example, all our games were at 12:30, because it wasn't that hot. It wasn't in the summer. But now the games have to be in the evening because it's so warm, like during the day. And that's what kills the TV times back in the UK. It's a shame. But I think as the season gets later on, there'll be some earlier games.
By the way, just having a quick look at your Instagram. Your Instagram game has come on leaps and bounds since you moved to Galaxy.
They take so many photos. Like, I finish a game and I just, there's like a link that you have. Like, everyone's got their own link. And you go on it and there's like 50 new photos from before the game, during the game. Like, it's just constant. So, yeah, just got lots to choose from, I guess.
And the chug of beer with fans in the corner when you win man of the match. What's that all about?
Yeah, it's like a tradition they do. You have to, like, if they choose you to be man of the match, then you go over to the corner, you take like this huge thing of beer, whatever you call it, and then you just have to like chug it and try and down it. But it's huge. Like, there's no way you're downing all of that. And then you just have like 2,000 people just screaming chug. That is quite American, actually. That now that I think about
that
it.
Answers that question. Yeah. There you go. By the way, I feel like we keep reeling you in, saying final question, and then we keep coming up with another one. There is another one that we do need to ask, and that's, you have saved a Bruno Fernandes penalty.
Oh yeah. It wasn't an official game though, so it didn't really count.
Should count though, and I think this goes back to the analysis, which, like you said, Richard, this podcast is going here, there, and everywhere. But did you analyse that? Because he scored 21 of his 22 penalties in English football. Technically, it's 21 of 23. I know that you're saying it was a friendly game, but it was sort of competitive, wasn't it? Just before Project Restart, he did have a penalty saved by Keylor Navas, I think, in the Champions League, but that had to be retaken and he scored. So it kind of is 21 of 22, but we're going with 21 of 23. So did you analyse that?
What, him taking penalties before?
Yeah, I mean, obviously his technique was quite well known, but did you have an idea of what he was going to do?
Yeah, because I just, from watching him and stuff, just like, it wasn't like I did analysis on his penalties before the game, but just seeing United games. And yeah, just kind of waited as long as I could. And then even after his skip, and then like as he was hitting the ball, then I just chose a side that I feel like he could only go that side. And then, yeah, managed to save it. But like you say, it wasn't an official game, so it doesn't count, unfortunately.
Easy. Just sounds easy, that, doesn't it?
Yeah, just wait for him. Kick it, dive, save it. I actually do feel, and again, we'll never know if this is the truth, but I know when Galaxy was showing a lot of interest in you and they were looking at different bits of footage, that game, you had such a good game, that game. And I know that, was it a draw? Did you lose 1-0? I can't think now, but I just remember.
We won.
Oh, was it, you won? Oh, that was it. No, of course it was. Yeah, 1-2, of course. And you do wonder, though, games like that, although, you know, not, no one knows about that game because it was a friendly behind closed doors, of course, and there is no... there was no highlights or what have you, but just, yeah, you do wonder what a game like that might have played.
Well, that's just what you have to, that's what I have to do when you're not playing, or you're like stuck behind, like for example, Sam was playing, then suddenly, you know, all the 23 games that you play, the cup games that you play, then that was like a big friendly just before the restart of the season at Old Trafford. Those suddenly become really important, you know, and it's not like you have 35 games where you can afford to have a bad game. It's like every game you play, you have to have a good game. And that's really, it's not, maybe there's some good things behind it, but it's not a great pressure to be under when you're going in as a goalkeeper, having to play well every game. That's what you have to use, I guess, if you're trying to speak to other clubs.
Absolutely. Well, look, we always finish with the very same question. Lots of different answers, but the question is, Jonathan Bond, what has goalkeeping given you?
Oh, that's a heavy question.
See, do you know what this says to me? This says you have never listened to one of our feature pods. That's what that says to me. All the great pods we've done over the years, all the great guests, you haven't listened to a single one.
Or I've just switched off with 5 minutes to go. One or the other. Could you not have warned me about this question before?
I probably could have, because this is one where we've had, I don't want to like give you hints here, but like, you know, Brad Friedel, I've got to be honest,
I've got a real
humdinger what Brad Friedel said, one that we bring really? Up a lot. Yeah. This is where like interviews are either remembered or forgotten completely, so no pressure.
for me, the thing that comes to mind would just be about mindsets and dealing with pressure, having responsibility, being a leader, kind of got the pressure that you have as a goalkeeper, and you learn to live with it, and it just becomes normal to the point where you maybe look at some midfielders and you think, you like, you don't understand what pressure is going into big games and stuff. And then you can kind of use that. You learn so much from that responsibility and that pressure that you can kind of translate it a little bit into just your general life. And yeah, it's just given me, in general, it's given me a lot, obviously a lot of happiness, a lot of freedom to do what I love every day. I love talking about it. I could talk about it all day. I could talk about it for another 2 hours with you guys. And yeah, I just, it's something that I'm passionate about, and I'm kind of going around in circles now, but I'd say if I had to single one thing, it'd be about dealing with pressure. It would be about having that responsibility and taking that into other aspects of life.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's a great answer, because it's the amount of people we ask the question, and it almost has nothing to do with goalkeeper. It's everything to do with goalkeeper, but nothing, because it always then comes back to something a little bit more personal. And actually the skills that you learn from being in the positions that you're put in as a goalkeeper. And yeah, so as much as you did go around in circles, and I'm so glad that you did, and I'm so glad that I put you under under pressure and put you on the spot, but then that's goalkeeping. There you go. And you came up with a solution.
Yeah. But like even when we mentioned on body language, for example, earlier, that's just not something you really have to worry about if you're a winger so much, you know. If you're a goalkeeper, like the body language, the confidence you give off to other people, and just learning those kind of skills and those small intricacies of like how that affects other people and psychology, and you know, it's important stuff to know just in general, or maybe after you retire and in life in general. I feel anyway.
I would love to talk for another 2 hours, Bondi, but it's 10 to 11 at night here, and we're fortunate to have Richard Lee at this
past
time.
Richard's bedtime.
He'd be flat on his back in 2 hours' time.
Tomorrow's going to be a struggle.
He texts me an hour before the start of the pod to say, oh, we're ready earlier. You need to start earlier.
Please.
I was like, nah, you're right. I'll see you at half one.
Love it.
Jonathan Bond, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on.
And there is the full-time whistle. The name's Bond. Jonathan Bond.
That's right.
And he's very much
Bond.
The hero in this one.
So that was Jonathan Bond. Really, really good interview that. We are going to reflect on the basis of that chat in one moment. But first, we did say at the top that we spoke about Watford and that wasn't included. So here it is. First, his time playing with Manuel Almunia and Aurelio Gomez. And then that wonderful moment with Gianfranco Zola in that playoff semi-final between Watford and Leicester City.
Yeah, first of all, Manu was really high level. So like on crosses and his reaction, like still at I think he was 36, 37, maybe when he was at Watford, and he wanted to train so hard every day. You know, he wanted the ball, like the speed of the ball, to always be smashed, and he wanted to constantly do plyometric work, and he wanted to train hard and then take that into the games. And as an 18, 19 year old, that was it leaves an impact on you for sure. And then when Aurelio came in, I like on crosses, he made it look so easy, and probably one of the most difficult leagues in the world to come for crosses in the championship. He used to just like eat them up, come for things that just weren't even his, and he would get there so comfortably. And then shot stopping wise, he just had such a long reach, and he just seemed to always balanced, and he read things at the right moments when he needed to read things. But then when he needed to be honest and stand there and use his reach and his kind of explosive power, he did that as well. And he was just an accomplished shot stopper and an accomplished cross taker for sure. I mentioned the fact that I would have liked to have gone out on loan, but at the same time, you know, working behind those two, I definitely learned a lot there as well.
Is it fair to say that one of your highlights at Watford was taking out Gianfranco Zola?
Yeah, that was a bit embarrassing, to be honest. I wish I hadn't done that.
I feel like you might have spoke about this on other podcasts or other. I feel like a lot of people ask you this question.
Well, yeah, especially Watford-related ones. But like when Deeney scored that goal, for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, Deeney scored that goal. And then we've all just run down the touchline, and then I just found the person next to me was the manager, Gianfranco. And I just, I just instead of going after Troy, I've just wanted to hug him for some reason. Because it's obviously Zola. I was a Chelsea fan when I was younger and all that, so I just wanted to just hug someone. And like, I don't know what I did. I like just knocked him over and then nearly took him out with the bottom of my studs as well. But hopefully I don't think anyone actually pays attention to who knocked him over. So hopefully I just fade into the background.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, in fairness, there was some crazy games. Am I right in thinking it was the same season where you had the two injuries, both yourself and Manuel Almunia, and of course Jack Bonham came on. Was that in the same season? Was that just before that game, was it?
Yeah, so it was the last league game of the season, and if we won, we ended up that if we had won, we would have gone up, and we would have finished second in the championship and gone up. But yeah, Manu got injured in the warm-up, did his hamstring like last kick of the warm-up, and I was thinking, oh my God, right, okay, so I'm going to be playing. Came on, I think I was doing all right, first 15, 20 minutes, and then a ball got played over the top, and then I came to the edge of my box, and their striker pushed my defender, who just caught me with his like elbow, and then I was just out. And then, yeah, and then Jack had to come on, having never played a game before, which is such a difficult situation. But yeah, it was just crazy. And then, obviously, we didn't win. And then the semi-final of the playoffs was when that Beanie moment happened as well. There was a lot happened that season. It was a crazy season.
You got caught with an elbow, by the way, from one of the smallest players I've ever seen play football, in Ekechi Anya. I mean, the luck for him to be the one that managed to elbow you is ridiculous.
I know, yeah. Yeah, very unlucky. But he caught me well, though. My nose is broken and everything.
And that Leicester footage, that is funny. Do you know what? We might have to try and put that up on our Twitter, because it's just absolutely... It's so, so funny. And do you know what? It's never actually spoken about, because he made a double save. There you go. Manuel Almunia, from that penalty from Anthony Knockhart. It was a good save, but I've always thought... It was so slow.
Oh
my word. It was unbelievable. It was almost like he was stuck in, it was like in quicksand, but he still managed to get the second save in.
My friend was like, he did that on purpose, you know, because he let Knockhart think there was an open goal. I'm not sure I'm buying it. I just think he looked so slow getting up. But to be fair, that's another example. Like, he had a lot of injuries that season, and I ended up playing however many games. And yeah, I think he was running on injections at that point just to get through the games.
Can we talk as well about the protective mask that you ended up wearing after that injury we've just spoken about in the game against Leeds? So I've seen a picture of this, and it looks like on the mask it's got JB30. Did you have it branded up?
Yeah, well, I had to go to Milan to like get it fitted. Yeah, we were like, our whole physio department was Italian. And I think there'd been a few other players. Who was it? It was like another famous striker, I can't remember. Who, like, a few players had done it around that time. So they sent me out to Milan to do it. And then they were like, oh, do you want it to be this color, that color? You can like design it and stuff. But luckily, I never actually had to play in it. I just had to train in it, because Manu was back fit. So it would have been difficult to play with that, because it does affect like your vision and stuff. It's not ideal.
Okay, Richard. Very good. Very good chat.
Enjoyed it thoroughly.
Really good. I should also flag the fact that there was a bit of a thing about the Brentford Bury game where I said, hang on a second, I was there watching that. And some people might say, well, that's not so weird. The reason it struck me was because I didn't know you then.
We didn't know
each
other.
So that's what was so strange about the fact that I was at that game.
We didn't know each other at all. No. Obviously we were only forced together, a couple of years ago now. And so I've got no idea about what happened in your life pre that day. Still have no idea what goes on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, very strange. Do you know what? It was even a bit strange to me. It didn't really come to me until recently that we'd actually played against each other. I don't know how I'd forgotten that. But the fact that we did, I thought, again, I had to shoehorn that in somewhere, like I always like to do, especially when I was victorious in a particular draw.
No, it's a good element that we have in the pod, that. The favourite save of his career, I thought, was interesting. First ever start, a double save. So his first save, really, that he made was his favourite save. So that was good. And using the English terms before the US terms, he'd spoken about that. Now, I don't know whether he was having a laugh here, but he then did it without even thinking when he said pitch. He said pitch or the field.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? He also then, you probably didn't see it, the day after we did the thing, he posted on Instagram saying, delighted to get a shutout.
Really?
Mm.
There we go.
There you go. But no, look, I've really enjoyed this conversation. Something I didn't say, and I probably should have said during the podcast, is that for those that don't know, I was very close to a move to the LA Galaxy back in the day. So when I was at Watford, there was a possibility. I'd lost my place at Watford, but I played a lot of games in the Championship, maybe 25, 26 at the time. And Galaxy needed a keeper, and Bruce Arena was the manager, who's now the New England Revolution manager, of course, America manager, etc. He was the manager of LA Galaxy, and I believe I got down to the final two, and it was out of me and Donovan Ricketts. Now, of course, they chose Donovan Ricketts, but at the time, Donovan Ricketts was playing for Bradford in League Two, and I was playing for Watford in the Champs. I thought I had a serious chance of that role, and it was always a massive dream of mine to play in the MLS. I nearly went to Colorado. I was offered a contract only for it to be pulled the next day because they found a goalkeeper in the draft. I nearly went to Tampa Bay Rowdies in the USL. So many nearly moments. So to be able to work closely with Jonathan in the way that I do, and for him to now be living out a dream of mine, effectively, and probably a dream of many of you guys listening in, you know, to go and be a number one at LA Galaxy, is for me something that's incredibly special. You know, it is an iconic club, certainly with the Beckham factor and everything else. But, you know, for all clubs that you could possibly play for in the MLS to be number one at, and for him to be doing as well as he is, and he really is going from strength to strength, it's one that pleases me a lot, speaking to him and just seeing and feeling how happy he is and how much his career now is kicking on in such a big way. Because I know the frustrations that he's had previously. You know, he was quite open and honest there in the interview, and some of the times that haven't been so good, some of the moments that haven't gone his way after such an explosive start. So for things now to be back on the up, to be very much a positive trajectory, I'm absolutely delighted for him, and to a small extent, I guess, living through him as well.
Good one. Very good interview to kick things back off.
Absolutely. First of many, we've got several more lined up, which we're trying to put together as we speak. But it is something we're going to try. There's so many out there that we'd love to speak to. So we are going to try and line up a good number in the coming months.
We are indeed. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, as per, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Keepers.
Wait.